So what we've got, again, cradle to grave pseudoscience, greed, propaganda, and the planned destruction of your health. That's what we're going to be talking about tonight. So without further ado, I'm going to show you some research here. This was actually, this comes out of the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health. So a major medical journal. And what you can see here highlighted, chronic diseases are among the most prevalent and costly health conditions in the United States. Nearly half, 45%, or 133 million of all Americans suffer from at least one chronic disease. This number is actually a little bit higher now today. It's 50% as opposed to 45%. And the number is growing, as it says. Chronic disease, including cancer, diabetes, hypertension, stroke, heart disease, respiratory disease, arthritis, obesity, and oral diseases, can lead to hospitalization, long-term disability, reduced quality of life, and death. In fact, persistent conditions are the nation's leading cause of death and disability. So I want you to just stop for a minute and let that soak in. Half of Americans have chronic disease. Half. All right, so look around in the room that you're in, and the next person to you, if you're not one with it, probably is one of them, right? And so what we're saying is these chronic diseases are pervasive, but why? And that's what I really want you to think about. Just kind of cue that question up in the back of your brain. Why are these diseases so prevalent? What is making that a reality and a possibility? That's really the crux of what I want to dive into tonight. So many of these chronic diseases, if we'll go to the slides again, so these are autoimmune conditions. Autoimmune conditions, oftentimes what I refer to as the redheaded stepchild, for those of you who understand that. And if you're a redheaded stepchild, look, no offense, but autoimmune disease is the redheaded stepchild of illness, of chronic illness, because it doesn't get the fame, it doesn't get the press, it doesn't get the money, the research funds. And that's why I call it the redheaded stepchild. But you can see here an autoimmune disease is an illness that causes the immune system to produce antibodies that attack normal body tissues. Autoimmune is when your body attacks itself. It sees a part of your body or process as a disease and tries to combat it. And we know that autoimmune disease in the U.S., again, this is just, these are just U.S. statistics, 50 million, it's estimated that 50 million Americans have some form of autoimmune disease. Again, these make up a large percentage of all the chronic diseases, because we talk about heart disease and cancer as chronic diseases, but again, autoimmune disease is nowhere in that equation, although it should be, and that's why I bring it up. So examples of autoimmune disease, if you've ever had a diagnosis of Hashimoto's, there's autoimmune liver disease, there's autoimmune skin diseases like psoriasis and eczema and vitiligo and dermatitis herpetiformis. There's autoimmune diseases that affect the GI tract, Crohn's and ulcerative colitis are autoimmune, celiac disease is autoimmune. There's autoimmune disease that affects the lungs, that's called asthma. There's autoimmune disease that can affect your endocrine system. So there's type 1 diabetes, there's Hashimoto's or hypothyroidism. There's pancreatic autoimmune disease. So again, these are conditions that are separated, and that's why they don't get the notoriety. Unlike heart disease, we clump heart disease together and we call all forms of heart disease heart disease. We call all forms of cancer cancer, but we separate autoimmune disease out as if they're different things, when in fact the underpinning causes of autoimmune disease are the same. And it's important for you to understand that. Now, let's go to another diagram here. If you look at the screen, the problem is getting worse. If we look at the incidence or the rise of autoimmune disease, it's dramatically going up and has been since the 1950s. And so why? Again, why is that the case? Why is that we're spending so much more money on chronic disease, including autoimmune disease, over the last many decades? Now, a lot of people that I see have been given, like if they've gone to their doctor, they've got autoimmune disease. This is kind of what they've been told about autoimmune disease. So let's just put this slide up as well. So I want you guys to be able to take notes if that's what you'd like to do. The cause of your illness is unknown. So like, I want you guys to participate tonight. Chime in. If this is you, like let me know, right? How many of you were told, if you've been to a doctor, that the cause of your illness is unknown and there's nothing you can do except take your medication? Like, raise your hand, say yes. How many of you have been told that food has nothing to do with your disease? How many of you have been told that you're just too stressed out, right, and just deal with your stress? How many of you have been told there's no such thing as leaky gut? How many of you have been told that the chemicals and the pesticides used in food production are safe? How many have been told that sunshine is dangerous and causes skin cancer? And how many of you have been told that not getting vaccinated is dangerous and irresponsible? And even yet today we look at this new kind of terrorizing mentality in the population, which is you're all of a sudden a bad person if you don't get a vaccine for the disease that shall not be named, right? You're now a bad person and you're killing your grandparents or you're killing, you know, somebody in your family because you're not doing your part to protect them. When was it ever your job to protect somebody else from becoming sick with an infectious disease? It wasn't. It was never your job. So don't let anybody coerce you. But I don't want to get off track. I'll go too deep down that road. My point is, how many of you have been told these things? And if you've been told these things and then dismissed, right, as if you're crazy, as if you're the one with the tinfoil hat on, right? If you stick to your guns and really try to have a conversation with your doctor, you end up being dismissed, called crazy, or kicked out of care. Let's look at the current system. Again, let's put this slide up because I want you guys to be able to have this information. So the current system, what do I mean by the current system? The current medical system, okay? What is it? It's diagnostic centric, which means what? Which means a doctor comes into the room, spends 3 to 5 minutes with you, here's what your symptoms are, and then gives you a diagnosis, right? Gives you a name, something that you can blame, right? So, you know, if you come in and you're like, I'm tired all the time, I have a hard time swallowing, I got a nodule right here, something's pressing right here, and my hair's falling out. And the doctor usually says, well, you have hypothyroidism, right? Gives it a name. And then when you proceed to ask any of these other questions, again, I'm gonna go backward on that slide, what's causing my hypothyroidism? Or fill in the blank with the disease that you were diagnosed with. What's causing it? The doctor says the cause is unknown, right? Take your medicine, because your medicine is the solution, right? Well, first of all, how does that not make sense? The doctor can't possibly know that the medication is the solution if he doesn't know what's causing the disease. So how in the world could he know that the medication is the end all be all solution? And the fact of the matter is he can't. He just doesn't have another tool. Most of them don't, okay? Not all. I don't wanna, this is not a damning presentation on medical doctors. I think there are a number of really fantastic doctors out there doing a lot of great things. So I don't want you guys to get the opinion of me that I am rhetorically hating all medical doctors or all medicines or medications. It's not the case, but let's talk about the abuse, right? So the current system, again, it's diagnostic centric. It's the treatment of symptoms with chemicals, right? No thought goes into patient empowerment with diet and lifestyle change. Remember that, because we're going to come back to that point. I'm going to show you something that your government understands, that your government knows is true, right? And your doctors aren't having this conversation with you. Again, hold that thought in your mind, right? No empowerment over diet and lifestyle change. Lifelong disease management is the focus. So what does that entail? That entails you being on a medicine or a medical procedure and following up for regular visits with your doctor ad nauseum forever, right? Again, we don't know what causes it, but we know how to cure it. And that's for you to visit me every 6 months and pay for all these labs and pay for this medicine and this other medicine and that medicine, right? Forever. It's incentivized for poor outcome because if you stay sick, your doctor makes more money than if you get better. If you stay sick, the hospital systems make more money. If you stay sick, the pharmaceutical companies sell more medications, right? If you stay sick, everybody on the other end of the people who are supposed to be the ones that care, that are helping you, all become enriched by your persistent illness. None of them are benefited should you get better, right? So in and of itself, if we just analyze it, you know, using just general Aristotelian logic, right? Where it's just like, why would we trust a system who's only going to benefit from our illness and never going to benefit from our recovery from illness? That doesn't make sense. That system is set up for corruption from the beginning, and it is important that you understand that. That system is also unsustainable. As you'll see in a minute, that system costs, just in the US alone, $4 trillion a year. That's more than 20% of the gross domestic product of the country. We can't sustain that medical bill indefinitely. And we know that it's corrupted by commercial influence and interest. You know, pharmaceutical advertising is a perfect example of that. It's speculated that anywhere between 70 and 90% of ad revenue during non-political seasons for news channels is derived from pharmaceutical dollars, ad spend. Well, how much is, you know, you think about that from the influence perspective. The TV channel makes 70 to 90% of their revenue from pharmaceutical companies that are trying to advertise their products. Is that potentially going to influence how media relays the message of health in the media? And I think with what we've seen in the last 2 years, I think we can resoundingly say yes. Like, look what the media has done. They've completely bastardized anything that is healthy for people, and they've told you to wash your hands, cover your holes, right, and get jabbed with something that's untested and unproven. And that's been the message. That tells me there's corruption there, right? Because if they were being honest and reporting honestly, there would be more of a conversation than just emphasizing those 3 points, none of which worked. Look at this next slide. So this is actually coming from our government's website. So you can look here. U.S. healthcare spending grew 9.7% in 2020, reaching $4.1 trillion. That's $12,530 per person. As a share of the nation's gross domestic product, health spending accounted for 19.7%. That's huge. What does that mean? That means that this is now a massive monster that has to be fed, right? The healthcare system, what is that? That's insurance companies, it's doctors, it's hospitals, it's pharmaceutical reps, it's drug stores, it's pharmaceutical companies, right? Hundreds of thousands of employees, all dependent on this system that is designed to keep you sick. It's rewarded if you stay sick financially, and it's penalized if you get better financially. And in this system, is $4 trillion. That's the cost of it, right? So if we look at, okay, $4 trillion, if you're trying to budget at home, right, and you say, okay, I'm going to spend, you know, $400 on organic groceries, and you go to buy those organic groceries and you get home and they're all rotten, yet you can't take it back to the store and get a refund. That's a lot like medicine, because it's the one business model where you can spend money on care. And if that care fails you, if that care maims you or hurts you, if that care doesn't work, even if it doesn't maim you or hurt you, it just doesn't work, you don't get a refund. You don't get any money back, right? It's the only business model that's not designed to serve the customer at the end of the day for customer satisfaction. It's just designed to manage and mitigate your symptoms. It's designed to prevent you from empowering yourself. Now, if we look at this next slide, this is directly from the CDC's website. So this is the CDC's most recent statistical breakdown, which is 6 in 10, that's 60% of adults in the U.S. have at least one chronic disease. 4 in 10 has two or more chronic diseases, so 40%. Right, the leading cause of death and disability and leading drivers of the nation's $4.1 trillion in annual health care costs. If you look at these diseases on the bottom of this image, it's heart disease, cancer, chronic lung disease, stroke, Alzheimer's disease, diabetes, chronic kidney disease. Notice what I said earlier about autoimmune disease. It's the redheaded stepchild. Not even on the list. Not even on the list. And autoimmune disease, again, affects 1 in 7 individuals in the U.S., and it's a major cause of death in women, especially women under the age of 65. So not even making the list, it should be on this list. And if we added it to this list, these numbers would actually be even greater. Again, this slide is also from the CDC's website, which is the key lifestyle risks for chronic disease. Look at them from left to right. Tobacco use. Interesting story about tobacco and pharma I'll share with you tonight. Poor nutrition. I want to just stop right there. Poor nutrition. What the hell does that mean, poor nutrition? You know, you go to a doctor. Now, I want audience participation here. How many of you have been to a doctor and the doctor says, with your chronic heart disease, with your chronic cholesterol problem, with your chronic high blood pressure, with your chronic kidney problem, with your chronic asthma, how many doctors have ever said, yes, Mrs. Jones, your diet is a major factor. We need to sit down and have a long conversation about diet change. Or how many of them said, your diet has nothing to do with it, be quiet, take your medication, and quit wasting my time? Like, which category have you experienced the most? I can tell you what I've seen, what I've experienced in the people that have come to see me is that the vast majority of them are told that diet doesn't matter. Now, again, that's a conflict, right? Because here, go back to the slide, your government, your CDC, your Center for Disease Control, right? This ever-knowing body of knowledge is claiming that poor nutrition is the top, in the top four risk factors for chronic disease, poor nutrition is there, right? So what does that mean, poor nutrition? Your doctors won't talk to you about it. Your doctors are going to dismiss it. Your government says that it is important, but nobody really defines what poor nutrition means, right? There's not, you know, this should be standard of care. What should be standard of care? You go to your GP, your general practitioner. Every year, you should have your nutrition checked. You should be checked for things like food allergies and food sensitivities. That's diet, right? Because no one diet is right for everyone. We're in the age today of personalization. Everyone is unique and different, and one size doesn't fit all. As we saw with this horrid vaccine, one size certainly didn't fit all. Not everybody had the same symptoms. Not everybody was maimed by it, but many were. One size didn't fit all. Look at any other drug in the history of creation. You know, some people are harmed by them. Some people are helped by them. One size doesn't fit all. So poor nutrition has to be looked at from the element of biochemical individuality. How is it going to impact you? And how is it impacting you? Are you reacting to blueberries, which are a superfood that some people react to? Are you reacting to broccoli? Are you reacting to foods that you thought were healthy but are actually causing your blood pressure to go up? Until we get doctors to start having that conversation, this model is completely devastatingly broken, right? When it doesn't acknowledge diet and lifestyle change as the primary drivers for good health, then what the system is actually saying is your body is inherently broken and you need these drugs so that it will work properly. And that's bullshit. I mean, I'm sorry, I got away, my language got away from me there, but that is not okay, right? It's not okay, and we all know it's a lie. It's like the 10,000 pound gorilla in the room. We all know that nutrition and lifestyle is important. Nobody wants to acknowledge it. And the second you try to acknowledge it with the supposed health expert sitting across the desk from you, you get ridiculed and gaslighted. And that's wrong. And that shouldn't happen. And the system should be different. And insurance should pay for it. But the system is rigged against you. Remember, it's rigged to keep you sick because that's what keeps profits profitable. So poor nutrition is on that list. The third thing on that list is lifestyle as well, right? If you look at all these, it's all lifestyle, right? Lack of physical activity. How many of you sit at a desk job? How many of your doctors have ever said, hey, that desk job may be contributing to your high blood pressure. Maybe we ought to consider, you know, a desk treadmill or something different than what you're currently doing so that you can be a little bit more active and still earn a living. So lack of physical activity is lifestyle. Excessive alcohol. Well, most people that I run into, why do they abuse alcohol? They abuse alcohol largely because they go to a job they hate. They feel bad because the food that they're trying to eat is actually poison in disguise. It's being called food and it's sanctioned, and its growth is sanctioned by our government. Then the value of whether that food is poison or not poison is dismissed by their medical doctor. And so they're at a loss. They're going to the experts trying to get an answer. And all the experts are contradicting each other just well enough to confuse the hell out of you. And so you don't really know where to turn and what to do or what decisions to make. And so you abuse alcohol in a sense because it takes the damn edge off. And at least that gives you a little bit of sanity on the weekends or the times or the occasions where you want to imbibe. So excessive alcohol use is a little bit different. There is a difference between an occasional drink and the, you know, and the glass of bottle of wine at night. Hey, don't forget to check out the rest of the series right here. Make sure you hit subscribe below. And as always, thanks for tuning in.